You want to hear, Chris? You're going to have to hush up and listen to me for a minute. Are we okay? I really want to do this now. I'm a selfish sucker, I'll tell you. When I realized that we were coming up on our anniversary, I told the kids that I asked them to do one thing for me. You know, at this point in life, I haven't got an awful lot of years left, and I'm not being morbid at all. That's just reality. And one thing I wanted to hear was old Chris come up here and do his thing at least one more time. Chris is one of the guys that I said earlier who is so responsible for what has happened here at this group. And the thing I love about Chris is that he has no real problem in telling people exactly the way it is. And I wish more of us did. Because he loves alcoholics enough, he loves the fellowship enough, and sees what goes on more than most of us have an opportunity. For he's willing to stand up in front of any group on God's earth, anywhere on this earth, and say we're killing an awful lot of alcoholics unnecessarily because we are not doing what our founders laid out for us. I've got a couple of AA angels. I've got more than a couple. I've got a bunch of them. But Chris is one of them. And the thing that I am so indebted to him for is the fact that he did bring Myers up here. And in doing so, we got our study guide, which has been one of the focal points in our group being able to be so successful in studying the Big Book. But every place we go, in the internet work that I'm doing anymore, there are two pairs of people that they've heard of. One's old Joe and Charlie, and the other one is what they call the evil twins. Hell, I call them angels, but I guess the devil's got angels too, hasn't he? But we wouldn't be what we are today had Chris not been so supportive. And he believes in us completely, and we believe in him completely. And Chris is the kind of guy that is making a difference in an awful lot of people's lives. We owe him. Our group owes him dearly. Chris, get on up here and put your blessings on us.
Nice sturdy podium. Nothing but the best for Chris Raymer. My name is Chris Raymer, and I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. Chris. You guys got here late. You got the cheap seats. Don't know what to tell you. Get here sooner next time. God, after that introduction, I mean, I'm honored to be here. I've talked at a few of these anniversaries, and I get invited to speak at lots of places, and I don't like to do it because I'm kind of shy and sensitive, but and see, y'all laugh every time, and it's like, and those of you that know me know that that's the truth, and I couldn't say no. This is the place, and there's so much stuff that goes on in these rooms. We have a fellowship out there that most of it, which would like to stick their head in the sand and think everything's just wonderful, because a few of us are getting sober. And the truth of the matter is, there's a lot more of us dying than are getting sober. And there's a lot of us that have been around the fellowship for years that are dying needlessly through a thing called untreated alcoholism. And I want to say this going in the door, and thank everybody that invited me and had anything to do with getting me in, up here. And I got to bring Patty with me, and my little sister's in the audience, so I have to watch my language. And I'm just non-delighted. I got some cats that were in the meeting when I first came back into Alcoholics Anonymous are in here. My friend Jan's in here, and I'm delighted. She'll keep me honest. Everything I say from the podiums is filtered through my experience. My experience of 7 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, unable to put together 30 days of sobriety. and my experience working at a treatment center for the last 13 years on the firing line, big hospital, lots of people through there, getting to watch on a daily basis the ravages of this disease, I am shy and sensitive, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I want to get clear real quick before we get into this. I want to tell you a little bit about how I got here, and I'll talk a little bit about the program. And I want to say, as always, as I start my talks these days, because, you know, I'm talking in a big book thumper conclave. You know, I got heroes. We got cats from all over the country that are here tonight that I've known for years that have come up here to visit with us and celebrate this birthday. And I'm honored. I'm speaking to the choir here, really. But I know that there's some infiltrators in here. Some infidels, if you will. Middle of the road, tap, sharing, probably not even alcoholic, buckaroos. Welcome. You're so welcome. But understand what we're about here. This program is so open and roomy. There is a place for every goofy nutcase in the world in our fellowship. I mean, you don't want to work the steps? You can find a group where they don't give a rat's butt if you work the steps or not. And you're perfectly comfortable. And maybe you can stay sober. Good for you. But we're looking, I think we are in this room. I know I am. I'm looking at the bigger picture. We have a way out of which we can absolutely agree and join in brotherly harmonious action. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that was published in 1939 says what it means and means what it says. And my experience is all the little knuckleheads that suffer from this disease can get well from this. I've watched burned out crackheads get sober. I've watched alcoholics that were so badly burned from this disease that everybody gave up on them. And yet, they reached a point where they could get humble enough. Now, there's the word, humble enough to accept this gift. And they did what we asked them to do, and they got sober. And the miracles just keep right on happening. The deal is we've got, I find that when I travel around, a lot of y'all that don't know me, and I get to travel a bunch. It's, Jan brought it to my attention because I remember one time she took me to my first speaker meeting in AA, and I remember listening, and I remember thinking, well, that was great. She said, but you'll never catch me getting up there. And she looked and said something out of the side of her mouth like, yeah, right. You know, we all eventually get our turn in the barrel and have to speak from a podium. I said, I'm never going to do it. Ever. Because I do. I get nervous. It makes me uncomfortable, you know. But I started doing it, and it kind of caught fire, and as people started asking. And again, I work for this hospital that looks the other way while I take off lots of time to speak. I'm booked solid. I had to squeeze this talk in between two others' talk. I'm honored to get a chance to do this. After every time I speak, somebody comes up, you know, people come up, thank you, we appreciate it, blah, blah, blah. And then you'll got the few, y'all heard me talk about this, you'll got the few that'll sit off to the sideline and crack their knuckles and wait for their chance to share with me. I really liked what you had to say, Chris, and I really appreciate your passion. But, you know, I believe, you know, and then here we go. Because everybody's so enamored. Well, my counselor said this. Well, my sponsor said that. And I appreciate that. My big book says this. But back in the day when Cliff was talking about, what we had was we had a fellowship that understood that our marching orders was the big book. Now, millions of us have died since the dawn of time of this terrible disease. And in 1939, we got these cats together that published this book, could not stay sober. They got together and started staying sober. They put together this program, and all of a sudden, hundreds of us, thousands of us, started staying sober. But we got so smart that we decided we could do it a different way. Why do people resist the 12 steps? Why do they resist the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? The fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well, folks. There are hundreds of meetings in Dallas, Texas going on right now. Very few of those meetings actually talking about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's just a fact. And people find that so offensive. Every AA is a good AA. Do I believe, I've said this from a million podiums, do I believe that God's in those meetings? Absolutely. But folks, the real alcoholic, even calling yourself a real alcoholic today is like heresy. Well, I don't know why you call yourself a real alcoholic. Are you trying to separate yourself and make yourself a different kind of alcoholic than other people? Bill Wilson uses it over and over and over. Alcoholics of our ilk, the real alcoholic, the person that's suffering from alcoholism, not the hard drinker, not the little disco drunk. I'm talking about the real McCoy, the cat that when he starts to drink, he can't guarantee you how much he's going to drink. Ends up in debacle after debacle after debacle. Always waking up with remorse and saying, I'm never going to do that again. And by 12 o'clock, we get thirsty, you know. We make up some good excuse why it's perfectly okay for us to drink one more drink. God, I started working at this hospital, you know, 13, 14 years ago. And it was so amazing to me because I'd never gone to treatment. I didn't have any money when I got back to the fellowship in 87 when I first met Jan and Terry and some of the guys that are in here. And I remember going to this hospital. It's a high dollar place. Some of y'all know. It's real high dollar. But I mean, I watch these patients come, and I said, you know, all this money and 30 days out of their life, you know, and get this great groundwork, and it's like, God dang, you know, I mean, who could not stay sober in this environment? This is great. And then I would watch them march right off campus and fall flat on their butt. But by the thousands. It became clear to me, real clear to me, that the resistance to doing this work doesn't change because you went to treatment. Every one of these 12 steps goes against a thing called my ego. I don't want to do an inventory and look at my stuff because I'm convinced that you're the reason I drink. Makes sense? Patty's still the reason I'm unhappy today. I mean, it's just literally. Oh, so the book says selfish and self-centeredness, that's the root of the problem. Would y'all agree with that? It's what the book says. It's still today. I just celebrated 19 years. How cool is that? Selfish and self-centeredness is still the root of my problems. It ain't alcohol. I've recovered from alcoholism. And you cats that are sitting in this room, if you happen to be coming from one of those groups where you introduce yourself as a recovering alcoholic, I suggest very strongly that you get a good sponsor, finish the work, and get this thing going. Yeah. Recover. I start reaching for the belt, y'all run. I get all lathered up, start speaking in tongues up here. But it was such a novel idea, because I mean, my story is this. Somebody asked me, says, what are you going to talk about tonight, Chris? I said, my story? I'm going to make up a new one tonight. We were raised in the hill country, and we had a great home and a great loving family. Pops was an alcoholic. I was a periodic, and it was quite crazy in our house at times. And he's a good man. And Mom's still alive today, and she's kicking butt. But I've got a great family. I've got a half-sister that's has never had a problem with alcohol. My little sister, we keep watching. No sign yet. We saw her at Christmas. So we were both watching, checking and judging, a little champagne in the deal, you know. They were making mimosas. Y'all heard me talk about this. Every Christmas, they make mimosas, you know, and they pour it, and they open this old bottle of champagne that had been around Clyde's house forever, and the stuff had turned to vinegar. It had been there so long that it had turned to crap. And they all looked at it and said, oh, well, that's too bad. And they poured it out. Well, wait, what are you doing? They're not like us. They don't understand, and that's just okay. But we come from the same family. This is the genetic bullet that Myers and I caught, they didn't catch. It's just that simple. Everybody in this industry, in the treatment center industry that I'm a part of, everybody wants to blame somebody for our alcoholism. I can guarantee you right now, there's people in this room right now that are sitting here blaming. Got it. If you ask them, they could tell you right off the top of their head who to blame for their alcoholism. It was Vietnam. It was the adoption. It was the abortion. It was the molestation. It was the rape. I'm so sorry that stuff happened to you guys. It did exacerbate the problem. It did make it worse. It didn't cause it. And if you're telling somebody that crap, stop. There's enough information out there on the internet right now about the new advances they've made. Folks, they know without a shadow of a doubt, this is genetic. You catch it at birth. Boom. You're it. Fact. Alcoholism and drug addiction is not causal. That's why it drives me crazy when we go to meetings and everybody wants to soft shoe this God thing. Book says on page 34, if you can stay sober on a non-spiritual basis, you're not one of us. But don't worry about the God stuff. You can do anything way you want to. Good orderly direction, that'll work. Have a nice life. You can put any face on that power you want, folks. You can call it whatever you want. Whatever you want. But there is a power out there that created this universe that removes the obsession for you to drink. You work the 12 steps, you're guaranteed to have an experience with that power. You can sit around these rooms forever and not have a spiritual experience. And do just exactly like my friend Cliff Bishop talked about. Oh, about 5 years out, start looking at the muzzle of a gun. Guys, going to meetings and not drinking don't treat alcoholism. This is where we got so far off the page in our fellowship. Everybody wants to blame the treatment centers. Ah, the treatment centers ruined AA. Ah, and who sat there and let it happen? Who sat there and allowed anybody to come into a meeting and say anything they wanted? We did. In the guise of live and let live, you can come into a meeting and talk about your inner child and waste a complete hour. Nobody will say anything. Thank you for that nice share today. Yeah, I wonder how many people you killed. The message that can interest an alcoholic must have depth and weight. That's what the book said. Here's the depth and weight. Guys, we have a guaranteed solution to this disease. Guaranteed. It's not easy. Again, because the steps go against my ego, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do a four step. I damn sure don't want to go make those amends. And I don't want to go work with another slobbering drunk. And so we put it off and we put it off and we listen to people tell us it's okay. Just chill out. You're not sober long enough to work with anybody anyway. Oh, phew. And then we miss the opportunity. Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob and Dr. Bob's Nightmare, there's a great little line in there and he talks about it. He said, for the first time, this cat, he's talking about Bill Wilson, comes and talks to him. He says, for the first time, there was somebody talking my language that understood this deal about alcoholism. Bill Wilson was at the time about 6 months of sobriety. Thank God he didn't have some stupid old geezer over there telling him, you can't work with anybody till you've been sober 2 years. If you're saying that in this room, stop. I'm asking you to please stop. Because you don't feel comfortable enough to work with somebody else, and because you don't have to work with somebody else to stay sober, because you're probably not an alcoholic anyway, stop killing other people with that crap. Come on. Because that's what it is. Crap. And I've checked with the dictionary, crap's not a cuss word, Cliff. I got it. Those that have watched me over the years know that I'm doing much better with the cussing. People get freaked out because of my urgency. You know, they my rigidity around this. I'm a big book thumper. I don't listen. I'm not real concerned how you work the steps. I'm not. The book is pretty open. We suggest you might try this. We suggest you might. I mean, they're pretty. They give us some pretty good guidelines, but you know, it's no time scale on there, and there's no. But it's pretty focused. I don't care how you work them. Just work them. Don't care who you pray to, but find something. If it hadn't been for a good sponsor, I never would have seen any of that. Drank and drugged for a long time, folks, and it was alcohol that kicked my butt. Alcohol, I never could stop. I never could quit. I was in the food business. I was pretty successful for a period of time, but the drinking wore me down. I ended up in North Texas, married and miserable. And got out of that marriage because I knew that was why I was drinking, and I was still miserable. I've tried to change a bunch of stuff. A lot of y'all know my story. I've moved around a lot. I've changed careers. I've done a lot of things. Changed my hair color once, and I grew a beard, shaved a beard. I've done everything. Listen to classical. Listen to jazz. Listen to rock and roll. Listen to country western. I can't stop drinking. My twin brother gave me a job, and Londa, his wife, gave me a job at the bookbindery. They needed some help, so they said. I'm not sure if they ever really needed the help or not, but they got me. I'd have been on the streets at the direction I was going. And they co-signed a little lease thing for me so I could get a little apartment, and forever grateful for that. And Byers and I were best drinking buddies, and that's what we did. We worked our butts off all day long and go home and just get squashed. And we were not real fun to be around.
We thought we were.
I mean, I couldn't understand why our social calendar stayed so empty, but we thought we were. But in 1987, a cold November night, I left work, picked up a stack of return checks and a 12-pack of beer about the same time, went back to my little apartment over in Louisville, and we're going to open those return checks. Realized I'd bankrupted another checking account. I'm 35 years old. I'm broke again. I'm physically dying. Physically, I'm sick. Liver damage. And I got about 40 pounds, and it's all right here. I'm just big, burly beard, and I'm got a same patch. Not really. Perpetually crooked. You know, I mean, I'm... Zipper always unzipped. And I've been in therapy on and off for 10 years. And I had been in AA for 7 years. I'd gone to AA in the early 80s to try to save that first marriage. And I was in and out for 7 years and couldn't stay sober. I was going to meetings where there was nobody in the place to carry the cigarette. Everybody thinks I'm making this stuff up. I get emails from all over the world. Chris, surely in those 7 years you heard somebody with a message. No. I was going to open discussion meetings. We did not carry the message out of the big book in those meetings. Every meeting started the same way. We read how it works, and it's the last you're going to hear about it. And then we're going to talk about, well, who's got the problem? Oh, shit, pick me. And then we would hear about somebody's problem. And that's what we did. To this day, it I don't know how to say it. I don't know. Even it freaks me out that's where our fellowship has gotten. Oh, Chris, if they don't talk about what's going on with them, if they don't talk about their problem, they're going to leave and they might drink. My book is crystal clear. It's not about giving that's the problem. It's when and how to give. When we start letting the alcoholic depend on us for answers to his problems, then we prevent them from going to find the real power, which is God. We turn into a fellowship of a bunch of little junior therapists. Sitting in the damn meeting, listening to people. Well, this is what I think you should do about that. I think you should get you a good lawyer. Why don't you shut up? Come on, guys, we help each other in the fellowship. We're junior legal assistants and doctors and, oh, I think you should get off those antidepressants. I don't think you should be... Shut the... It's perfectly okay. You can share anything you want in here. No, you can't. 7 years sitting in meetings listening to people talk that stuff. When we talked, we weren't talking about war stories. We were talking about the pissing and moaning, the fix-it meetings, we call it. I remember sitting in a meeting and listening to somebody talk for 20 minutes about their weed eater. You got a guy in the room that's detoxing, for God's sake. The chance to pull him with a vision is short and narrow, but we're going to... Oh, but the weed eater. let's talk about that. And if it's not the weed eater, it's your stupid divorce. I don't want to hear about it. AA is not therapy, and AA was never intended to be a dumping ground for your problems. And we turned it into that. Yeah. That's just the bottom fact. I'm watching the clock closer than y'all are, guys, so don't worry about it. I'm going quick. I got up off the floor of that little apartment in 1987 and walked to the bathroom and took down a couple of bottles of pills and tried to commit suicide. And there was no note. I've said it from every podium. I will continue to say it. It's the coward's way out. But I was just so sick. Nothing in me wanted to die. I just did not want to continue to feel the way I was feeling. I've said this to a gazillion alcoholics and addicts in here. Because I know you've got some addicts in here. Because I saw you. I know you. You sneak through the back door. This is an AA meeting. It's habit, because I talk at both fellowships. But we tell somebody we're going to stop a few hundred times, you know, and then let them down. And after a while, you just lose all hope, you know, and you just feel so useless. The spiritual malady that's described as irritable, restless, and discontent, depressed, boredom, the anxiety, this low self-esteem, this is the stuff we live with 24/7. And the only time I feel remotely good is when I've got some alcohol in my body. But the stuff's killing me because I can't just drink enough to get to that spot where I'm okay. I always overshoot the mark, and now I'm sloppy, and my patch is crooked again. And I'm calling some girl on the phone at 2 o'clock in the morning, making a complete ass of myself. And I don't want to do that. That's not me. It's not the person that my father raised. It's where alcohol took me. Been to some places. And I'm tired of fighting. I'm taking handfuls of medication, and nothing's working, folks. I am miserable. I ate those pills, swallowing them down with some Black Label beer. Somebody said the other night, said, well, at least you committed suicide with some class. No. Black Label beer. That crap's got hair in it. I'm telling you, it's... hangover from hell, but it's real cheap. And about the time I got this stuff down, I heard a voice that night said, Chris, don't do this, go back to AA. Voice in the air. Chris, don't do this, go back to AA. Crystal clear. Not a thought. Perhaps Alcoholics Anonymous. Chris, don't do this, go back to AA. Heard it a couple of times that night. Freaked me out. Made myself sick, lay down on the side of the bed, passed out. Next morning, I heard it one more time. Same, don't do this, go back to AA. And I made a commitment that I would do that. I went to work, and at 6 o'clock, detoxing, I drove up to an AA meeting I'd never been to before. There was an old guy named Charlie that worked for my brother, and he had 12-stepped me for years. Come on. There's a group of people down there that are talking about the solution. Come on. Never would go. But he showed me one night. Picked me up after a blackout. Showed me where the meeting was. I wouldn't walk in with him. I wasn't ready yet. I was as ready as rain, but I wasn't ready. And But I knew where the meeting was, and it was close, and I was on the way home, so I stopped. And I screwed up some courage. I mean, back to Alcoholics Anonymous. I, what am I doing here? And I walked in the back door. Jan was there, and some of the cats were there, and I'll never forget that meeting. I hear people from the podium all the time. I don't remember my first meeting. I don't remember 7 years worth of meetings. But that meeting, I was detoxing. I remembered. And I remembered that everybody in that place was doing two things. They were laughing and they were smoking. Isn't that right, Jack? Every person in there had three cigarettes sticking out of their mouth. Long shotgun meeting, and I'm not smoking. You know, I'm dipping. You know, I'm a purist. I mean, I'm not gonna take my body and I walk in and I just, you know, the ceiling's lowering and I'm feeling. They're laughing and I'm self-conscious. I know they're laughing at me and I know a lot of the faces in there because I've seen them up in North Texas for years. And a little old girl gets between me and the door and pulls me down in a chair and stay. They went around the room that night and they shared hope with me. It was a first step meeting. New guy. Obviously, I'm a new guy. And they went around the room and they shared hope. There was no drunkalogs, folks. Nobody says, well, you know, this is how I got here. Nobody. We've got to stop doing that, folks. Telling how you got here is great in a 12-step call and from this podium. But in a meeting, it's a waste of time. Who cares? And I know some of y'all disagree. Who cares? Oh, I just hear the clock ticking, and I know how much we got an hour. Let's get to the good stuff. And these people did that night. I don't know. Paul was chairing, I'll never forget, and he said, let's share some hope with this new guy. And they all went around, they talked about stuff I could get my teeth into, you know, new jobs and credit cards and getting married and just stuff that I could relate to, folks. I'll never forget it. There was a guy, and I don't remember his name, but he was sitting in one of the corners and kept talking about he had in his possession a car that had a license plate, an inspection sticker, and a spare. Some of you richer people think, well, that's not... Buddy, I was on the edge of my seat. If he'd said at the same time, and I got laid, I'd have kissed his feet. Oh, my gosh. After the meeting, there were some cats that got in there. And Carrie Bob and some of the cats and Don Smith and some of the buds. I'm busting their anonymity, but they're all buddies of mine and they don't care. But they all came up afterwards and they asked me if I was done. They'd watched me up in North Texas before picking up chips, Desire chips by the hundreds. And they said, Chris, are you done? Are you ready to stop drinking for good and for all? They did not say, are you ready to stop drinking one day at a time? These cats understood what was in this book. The book says, ask the newcomer if he's done. If he's not done, pat him on the ass and let him go get done. Well, he may die. Yes, he may. But getting him in too quick is going to sabotage your chance of helping him later down the road. The book says we don't chase drunks. This is a program for people that want it. They asked me if I was done, and I said yes. And they hugged my neck. And the next morning, they made sure that I got back to that meeting again at 10 o'clock. And we did a third-step prayer afterwards. I was to do several third-step prayers after, come to think of it. Went and got some Mexican food and came back, and there was an old guy that started talking to me about how to work on a four-step. Just exactly like Cliff was talking about. These cats knew. I don't know what that group is doing now. I don't have a clue. I haven't been back. I'm telling you, these cats at the time that was in there. I mean, do y'all realize how I could have gone to any other meeting and I landed in this meeting who had a bunch of people in there that understood what was in this book. And they knew that if I didn't hear the solution, that if I didn't get connected spiritually, that I wasn't going to stay sober. And they didn't mind. They weren't worried about hurting my sensitive little feelings. They loved me enough to tell me the truth. I make it sound like they were so abrasive. They were not. They were very loving, kind people. But they told me exactly what to do. And they didn't let me jog either way. A week into this deal, they had a group conscience. And I went to this group conscience. They wish we have an opening on the cleanup committee. Would you like to do that? And I remember saying, absolutely effing not. Don't you remember me? I'm the newcomer. I'm the most important person here. I've been around AA for 7 years. I knew enough one-liners to be dangerous. And the guy that was my sponsor at the time, Don, looked at me and he says, "You need to take this position. A week sober, you need to take this position." I said, "Damn it. Okay, I volunteer." Thank you. Thank you, Chris, for stepping up to the plate. But I remember, I tell you, one of the cats gave me a key, and I went down, took off an afternoon at work before, and went down there and vacuumed and cleaned and spit polished that bathroom and did all the stuff. You know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to show these buckaroos how this is done. And I remember sitting in that meeting that night, and those people started coming in, and they were gasping at how clean that club was. I mean, it was just, little lady walked up. I'll remember, never forget her, came up and hugged me. She says, "This is the cleanest I've ever seen this place. Did you do this by yourself?" Guys, but that's what this is about. Less than a week earlier, I was trying to commit suicide because I felt worthless. And now all of a sudden, I'm doing something. And that club became my club. Don't even think about dropping that cigarette right there, buddy. Ashtray's over there. I created they had me answering the phones. Well, I'd stand like this, the phone ring. But I got it. You could kill somebody on this phone. You have to be very, you know, I mean, and they did exactly, they laughed and they smiled and they encouraged me to keep doing it. Because the first time I was participating in Alcoholics Anonymous. And guys, I'm telling you, my life has been a rocket ever since. We went to other groups. The people there showed me about the fellowship. They took me to speaker meetings where the message was being carried. They taught me about how to do the right things in AA. Jan was the speaker. Shake his hand. Well, I didn't like him. I didn't think... Shake his hand. Y'all with us on the... They taught me AA etiquette. My sponsor had a step study and got me involved in that pronto. It wasn't any of this that I experienced for 7 years where, welcome, keep coming back, everything's going to be okay. It was none of that. And the miracle has been pretty amazing ever since. The obsession lifted for me about 2 weeks into this fellowship. I'm sitting on my truck in that old parking lot of that apartment complex where I tried to commit suicide, and it dawned on me that the obsession to drink had lifted, and I don't know when. I hear people say all the time that this sobriety is not an experience, it's a process. Maybe you haven't had a spiritual experience. You want to drink every day of your adult life. And then one day wake up and you don't want to do that anymore. I don't mean I don't want to drink anymore. I mean, what was the big deal about? Y'all know what I'm talking about. When the obsession, the mental obsession leaves you, it will be an event. I cried like a baby. Sat on the tailgate of my truck and cried. Went up to my little apartment, cranked up some hot jazz, washed the damn dirty dishes, cleaned the ferret cage. Happy, joyous, and free, folks. I got to say a couple more quick things and I'll let you go. I want to make real clear, because I know that some of these people are going to make CDs of this, and I want to start circulating this out into the world. When you guys hear me say something from the podium, understand that if you can't reconcile it with a big book, you need to forget it. I'm sharing my experience, and my experience may be different than your experience. About 6 months after I got sober, with the help of some people in the fellowship, Jan was one of them, I got to the doctor and was able to wean myself off all the medication that I was taking. People hear me speak from the podium and they say, "Well, Chris, you got off the meds," and so they stop taking their meds. And they get drunk. And now they're pissed at me and everybody else because of it. I'm telling you, folks, I'm not a fan of antidepressants. I am telling you this, that some people need them for short periods of stabilization. I am not a doctor. I detoxed off the meds under a doctor's care. Does anybody hear me say anything different? If you stop taking those medications, folks, quickly, like just stop taking them because you can't afford them or because you think you don't need them anymore, you will go crazy. Stop playing doctor. Yep. Cool? I had a spiritual experience 2 weeks after I got back to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I know some of you in here it takes longer. It will always happen as a direct result of taking the 12 steps. At some point in those 12 steps, the spiritual experience will take place, the obsession to use will go away. If it doesn't go away, it's because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And the biggest thing I see, here it is. We won't work with others. Huge difference between working with others and sponsorship. Sponsorship is the experience that you get to transport to somebody after you've worked the 12 steps. Working with others is essential from day one. I firmly believe that those people in that first meeting back in 1987 saved my life because they would not let me sit on my ass. They kept me busy. There's a guy that pulled some strings. He worked for one of the treatment centers, and he pulled some strings. You weren't supposed to go in there and talk until you were 6 months sober. And they pulled some strings so I could get in there earlier. I wasn't speaking. I was just carrying the big books. But I was there. Working with others is anything that helps us carry the message. Making coffee, setting up chairs, come early, stay late, be of service. The big book, Bill Wilson. Abby, the guy that 12-stepped Bill Wilson, told him that the spiritual realm would save his bacon, but that faith and belief in God alone would not make this happen. That it had to be, and it had to be in union with a thing called action. Now, Bill Wilson went on to start the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Abby stayed sober a short period of time and got drunk and struggled with his sobriety the rest of his life. Periods of sobriety, periods of drunkenness, because he would not do the one thing that he told Bill Wilson to do. Work with others. Folks, I don't mean from the, you don't have to do it from the podium, but you got to find your niche. If you're good with numbers, treasurers, if there's decorating committees, I mean, there's 10,000 things that you can do out there. But ultimately, as you work the 12 steps, your job is to carry somebody through the work. Because until you've sat in a room and watched somebody that you've taken through the work over there with a big book open, taking somebody else through the work, you haven't lived yet. And people send me emails all the time. Oh, Chris, you make it sound like that's such a big deal. But you've never done it. It's like talking about sex. Then go do it. Sorry, Cliff. I got to tell you guys real quick. From my vantage point in that hospital and from out there on the podium getting to speak a bunch, most weekends I'm someplace. And I'm telling you, I'm more excited now at 19 years of sobriety than I've ever been. I know that I know so little. There's people in this room that know a lot more about the big book than I do. And I'm excited to get to know you and get to learn what you know. I mean, this information is absolutely fascinating. And to watch the fellowship around us change. And some of y'all that maybe you don't see it, but it is changing. The first anniversary I did here, we didn't have a third of this many people. And now look at it. Alcoholics Anonymous is changing right before our eyes. And it's happening because little big book thumpers, one at a time, are getting it together and going back into these meetings and changing the face of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're going back to group consciences and they're changing meetings to big book studies and 12 and 12s and as the literature-based meetings. They're starting primary purpose groups where we get to study the literature. The literature tells us how to work the steps. The steps get us connected to God, and God keeps us sober. No more untreated alcoholism. No more sitting in meetings miserable. We have our marching orders. The problem is we've got a whole lot of people that want to sit on the sidelines. I don't have to do that. You're missing the whole point of this. It's by working others with others that I get so many blessings in my life. I want to make a clear point for the same reason I mentioned the medication. because I want everybody that hears this to hear what I'm saying. One of the nooses around our necks as little big book thumpers is, after a period of time of studying the book and having spiritual experiences and watching our lives change, some of us become quite arrogant. That's hard to believe. We have a tendency to go into meetings that we probably shouldn't be in anyway and stir up a whole pot of crap with our mouths, telling them that they're not doing it the way it's supposed to be done. And yet the group is full of lots of people that are sober and happy. The absolute arrogance of us. We don't like it when somebody comes in here and tells us to leave our big books at home and we don't want you to share the big book. So why are we going into meetings telling them that they got to read the big book? I'm telling you guys, we need to become a beacon in the dark for people that are dying in our fellowships. And one last chance, they can come to us and they can hear the solution. But if middle of the road is working for them, there's nothing wrong with that. And I mean that. But why am I saying this is because a lot of you people have taken stuff I've said from the podium. I've encouraged you to go back in and change your group consciences. Go back in and I've given you permission to question the way the group is being run. But there's a place to do that. It's at the group conscience level. And if they don't want to change, then you get the chance to go start your own group. But we don't use the big book as a weapon. And I sit in meetings and I listen to people do it all the time. Well, that's not what my book says. What are you, nuts? My book says you've got to do... You're not pulling anybody with a vision at that point. You're beating them up with the literature. How do you know what you don't know, folks? You're not going to get anybody into our fellowship by jamming this book up their butt. You're going to be a symbol of what this fellowship is about. Love and tolerance. Do I believe... To this day, right now, facing you, do I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous has got some sick aspects to it? Yes. Do I believe we've gotten off the page? Yes. Do I believe we can change it? Yes. Here's how. One drunk at a time. You sponsor him and carry the message right straight out of the book. And he turns around and sponsors him. And he turns around and sponsors him. And the lineage, straight from Bill and Dr. Bob, straight from the original 100, comes right straight back down. And we'll start seeing success rates like we saw in the 50s that we don't see today. That's what we're seeing. I cannot tell you. Some of you guys are brand new at this. I got to say this real quick and get out. Some of you, you would not believe. When I first started coming to Cliff Bishop's meetings up here, we met in a library. There was 12, 13 of us. I mean, guys, it was, the thumpers, they wouldn't even put our meetings on the schedules. You do big book, still to this day, we see it. We did some workshops with Myers in London not long ago. An intergroup boycotted us. They boycotted us in Denmark. They boycotted us in Iceland. Intergroup, AA as a whole, didn't want us carrying the message out of this book. You know why? Because it makes some people uncomfortable. Because there's a lot of people in our fellowship that have never done the work. They don't know what's in this 164 pages. And it makes them uncomfortable. And I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, but I damn sure want to be here when the newcomer that has tried all of that other middle of the road and wants to come back and see what real AA was about. And that's what we can do, each and every one of us. We can be responsible. But we can do it with kindness and love. Stop trying to change AA at a group level. One alcoholic at a time, that's how we're going to do this. You down with that? I got a buddy that I work with that sent me a little email yesterday. I thought it was so appropriate. It came from a little meditation book. I don't know which one. It doesn't matter. But it's a great little one-liner. It's a question. How many burdens can you lighten this year? In Al-Anon, in AA, in all of our other sister fellowships, how many burdens can we lighten? How responsible do you feel, no matter what your circumstances, no matter how shy you are, how responsible do you feel tonight to turn around and carry the message of hope back to a newcomer? I hear it every day in emails and phone calls from all over the world. Well, I just don't think anybody would want what I have. It's not your place to worry about that. Shut up. Shut up. Get back into a meeting. Sit there. I had the same conversation with Jan. Same conversation. One night this little guy comes into a meeting. He was a cook and we got to talk a little bit. And damn it, the guy didn't call me that night. I was about 3 months sober. I'll never forget. It just pissed me off. I said, God, no, I'm not here. She said, yes, you are. And handed me the phone. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know if she'll remember it or not. He was tore up. He was freaking out. He didn't want to drink and he had to go to work in 2 hours and he wanted somebody to talk to. So I said I'd meet him down at the kettle and we'd have a cup of coffee. And I sat down there and I talked to him a little bit about my experience and I shared a little hope with him about what my life was like today, not wanting to drink and being in the food business. And I got to tell you something, folks. He stayed sober a while and then he got drunk. But I'll never forget coming home that night. Jan was there and she looked up. She said, buddy, what happened to you? Because I wasn't the same person. The first time in my life I realized that I had the power to actually help somebody else. How can I repay that? How can I repay that guidance and that love? Folks, we've got to pass it on. Everybody's waiting for the treatment centers to fix this problem. It ain't going to happen. There ain't no pill that can get rid of the obsession to drink. God does that. Now let's stop mincing words about this God stuff. And let's start taking a clear message of hope back to the newcomer who still suffers. And if y'all ever need any help, y'all know how to reach me. I'll be there for you. I cannot tell you how grateful I am to be in a room with so many of my heroes. We've started meetings. And have stood in the trenches for so long. You old geezers that continue to come back, thank you. I know how to stay sober 19 years. I've done it. Don't have a clue about 20. Thanks for sticking. Haven't shared from the podium in the last 5 years that I haven't said this. You women in the fellowship that have come and stayed, thank you. A lot of women come to our fellowship. And then they hook up with some old hairy leg boy and they're gone. Well, you know what the book says? We got to re-enter the mainstream of life. I don't think that's what it meant. You women that are here, thank you so much for standing in the trench with us, helping us carry the message. We couldn't do it. We just couldn't do it without you. You young people that are around this fellowship, you're the lifeblood. We need you. We're not talking down to you. You don't have young adult alcoholism. You got the same thing I got. And the solution's exactly the same. Thank you for sticking. Y'all, thanks for having me. Thank you.
Heard you speak many times, Chris, and I just wish you'd bring a little energy to the podium. I've been waiting. On a serious note, I hope each and every one of you heard how to make a difference and how to find that fellowship that you actually crave, because he made one amazing point right there, and I hope you all heard it.